Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor and also neilhaley.com. And I'm excited to welcome the program celebrity, Carrie Elwes. Carrie, thanks for calling. How are you? And I appreciate you coming.
Well, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. And you know what? It's very interesting to discuss The Princess Bride again. You released it last year. The book is called As You Wish, The Inconceivable Tales from the Making of The Princess Bride, and you're a New York Times bestselling author. Did you ever think that would be the case?
I couldn't believe my good fortune. Honestly, the book has sold like hotcakes, and now it's out in paperback, and we made the LA Times bestseller list, so very happy about that.
Well, congrats for sure. Now, one of my favorite moments is interesting is talking about Andre the Giant. I'm a former professional wrestler, Carrie, and I was a huge fan of Andre the Giant. Yes, yeah, so I wanted to talk. I wanted to get one of your memories. I'm sure you shared in the book about Andre.
You want a story about Andre?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh gosh. Okay. Easy. Well, the first scene we shot together was when they were about to storm the castle, and we're on the wall, and I come to after being mostly dead, that's when Andre let out a 16-second fart that was so loud it could be heard in China, and deafened everybody, and brought shooting to a standstill. And when it was all over, there was a stunned silence from the crew, and Rob Reiner, our director, said, "Hey, Andre, you okay?" Like that. And Andre, without missing a beat, said, "I am now, boss." Like that. And that reduced us all to tears of laughter again. It was amazing.
And he was such a kind-hearted soul, wasn't he?
Sorry?
He was a very kind-hearted soul. Good guy, wasn't he?
Oh, he was a beautiful guy. He was just a beautiful, beautiful guy. I call him, he was a gentle giant. He always had a smile on his face, always.
Oh, well, fantastic. When you first got the script and you were auditioning, did you ever think it was going to be as big as you thought this movie would be when you first?
Well, we hoped it would be. You know, I really did hope it would be because it was such a fun movie to make. And it was such a beautiful message. And we hoped it would be great. And it came out and it didn't do so well. So we were all a bit depressed.
But how did it last the time that it did after that fact when you said it didn't
Well, about 10 years after it came out, VHS was born. Along thanks to the invention of the VCR,
yeah.
we had another life. The film, people started renting it, the VHS copies, and buying it and giving it as gifts to family. And then it became this hit. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, so was it kind of, Carrie, in a way that the promotion of the film first coming out wasn't as good, or it just became it had a lifeblood of itself through VHS and distribution?
Right. Well, the first time they sold it, they didn't really know how to sell the movie, frankly, the studio. They weren't sure, was it a comedy, was it a fantasy film, was it for kids, was it for adults? Well, it was all of those things. But they didn't know that. They tried to sell it as like a sort of kids movie.
Oh yeah,
it's not.
No. And instead, especially, it's a fairy tale for adults in the clean version. So that,
right.
And that's
kids can enjoy it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's what makes it unique.
But if you're just marketing the kids, you're not going to get the adults out to the theaters and all those different things. And once they saw the great work. It was that kind of thing. Now, Carrie, when thinking about what was your fondest memory of making it?
Well, the whole film was a fond memory for me because it was my first big studio film, and I can barely remember a day without laughter on the set. And it's the film that gave me the life I have today, so I'm very grateful for it, and I have nothing... The reason I wrote this book is because I have fond memories of every day being on the set.
Where did you guys shoot the film?
We shot it in Derbyshire, outside Sheffield, in the Peak District. That's where we're all running around outside the fire swamp. and in the forest. And then Haddon Hall doubled for Florin Castle. And then Shepherd Studios is where we shot the fight sequence and Miracle Max and...
Wow.
I guess the wedding, all of that, yeah.
And working with the cast, so the reason you wrote the book, again, as you said, it was such a tremendous experience all the way through, working with the cast, directors, everybody.
That's right. We all had a lovely time making the film, and Rob really set the tone. You know, Rob Reiner, our director,
he took
us all out to dinner every night. I mean, we really had a wonderful time.
Fantastic. And another thing you have right now is The Art of More. Can you tell me a little bit about The Art of More?
That's right. So Art of More is an online streaming show that's on Crackle, which is a free streaming network, and you can just go to crackle.com and start watching. It's a really fun show. We're in our second season. And I do the show with Dennis Quaid and Kate Bosworth and Christian Cook, and it's a show about the art world and all the devious activity that goes on, you know, in auction houses and stuff like that, with buying and selling art. And it's really a fun, exciting show. It has a lot of action and drama and everything going on. It's really great. We're very proud of it.
Would you consider yourself an art connoisseur? Did you understand, know the history of art?
Not really, an amateur connoisseur, if you will. I know what I like, and I'm studying more of it now that I'm in the show, of course, so I'm acutely more aware of it.
And the show also gets art out there, right, which is another missing component.
It does. We highlight the work of Ed Ruscha this season in one of the episodes. So, yeah, we're getting artists involved with the show, which is really fun.
And in that process of working with this group of people, do you like working with them as well? For the Art of More?
Again, I'm sorry.
The group of the Art of More. Do you enjoy working with this group as well and the cast you're working with?
Oh my gosh, we love going to work with each other. What's great is we all bonded right away, the actors, and so it's a joy to go to work, and we have fun playing these characters. We all know these characters so well. The casting was impeccable on the show. And yeah, they're wonderful actors. They're all professional and they're fun. And that's what makes it joyful.
Well, fantastic, Kerry. Where's the best place we can find information on you, learn more about you, and purchase your book? I know we can go anywhere to purchase your book.
Learn more about you. You can go to asyouwishbook.com or Simon & Schuster and type in Kerry Elwes and Simon & Schuster, and the bio page will come up.
Cool.
IMDb site if you want to learn more.
Absolutely. And great, Kerry. Well, thanks for coming on the show. Really enjoyed you in The Princess Bride. Definitely going to check out Art of More and the story about Andre. I'm sure you didn't think you'd get a question like that, but Andre's the man, and may he rest in peace, and it's great to know the story.
May he rest in peace.
All right.
I want to wish you and all your listeners a very happy Thanksgiving, and thank you for having me on your show.
Well, thanks, Kerry, and happy Thanksgiving to you as well, and take care. Thanks for calling. Okay, bye-bye.
God bless.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. God bless. Take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor and at Total Radio Net, and I'm excited to welcome the program celebrity John C. McGinley. John C., thanks for calling, and we're going to be talking about a bunch of fun things today, especially the season finale of Stand Against Evil. John, thanks for calling.
Yeah, the show is just completely subversive and wrong, and everything about it is just completely. Look, it's born out of the brain of Dana Gould, and Dana was one of the Emmy Award winning writers on The Simpsons.
Oh, wow.
And so when you combine kind of Dana's sensibilities from The Simpsons with kind of my take on comedy from Scrubs, and then you hide that comedy in a horror show, then you get Stand Against Evil.
That's got to be hilarious, because I loved you in Scrubs. I mean, you were fantastic. It made me always think about, specifically when I was a student teacher, and how cooperating teachers and teachers would treat me. And the same kind of thing went on and with the show Scrubs. And as you were a resident helping the residents learn the business, but also see it as lighthearted at times with the difficult subjects you guys discussed.
Yeah, I thought the interesting thing about the Dr. Cox character in Scrubs was that he was the mandate that he was challenging these kids with was saving lives.
Yeah.
Not connecting pipes. And so that's why I took such liberties with teaching with a jackhammer. It was just like, this isn't about sanding the wood on the chair and making it smooth. This is about saving someone's life.
Right.
And so that becomes different. And so there's a different pressure. And so I thought Dr. Cox could come at that a little more aggressively than somebody who's, you know, maybe altering a yoga pose with a student.
Is that your personality, John? The personality of from Scrubs?
I don't know. I read an interview with John Malkovich, and John suggested that there was, in contemporary acting, that there was two schools of American acting. And one, he referenced Robert De Niro, who, when he was really at the peak of his powers, he became the characters, Raging Bull, King of Comedy, Taxi Driver. And John said the other side of that is when the characters become the person. And he said that that's what he does. He invites the characters to become him. And I'm kind of on John's school. I invite them into McGinley land. And if we can meet in there, then great. If not, then I don't do the movie.
I can tell that you could, and that's why a lot of your characters were pretty intense at times, right? And so you're adding a lot of your intensity with the comedy of Scrubs, with also the horror. So all of the perfect things in this show, it sounds like to me.
Yeah, and the hardest tone to straddle in Stand Against Evil, what we chose to mimic, which was a little ambitious, was what John Landis did in An American Werewolf in London. And what he successfully did was he straddled horror and comedy.
Right.
And so that's really hard, because if the monster or the witches or the threat is too profound, then you have The Exorcist. And you can't break a joke in The Exorcist. It's not possible.
No, you can't.
And then if the threat or the consequence is declawed or denuded, then you have Scooby-Doo, and there's no threat. And so to honor the threat and break jokes is really hard, and because one gets sacrificed. And to try to stay right in that narrow bandwidth is what we did with Stand Against Evil, and it felt very satisfying to have stayed authentic to that and for it to come out as well as it did.
So, John, you were definitely one of the creative people behind this whole thing, then, it sounds like, to me, correct?
Yeah. I'm the producer of it.
You're the producer. So what was that different for you to be more your mindset?
No, I've produced 5 or 6 films and mm-hmm. I've written a few. And no, it's not. I prefer it.
You like that? Okay, good. I mean, and I find this very, it's again available on IFC, and tonight's the season finale. So the storyline, without giving away anything, give us that little, the premise of the show and stuff, your characters and stuff.
It's Archie Bunker fighting witches reluctantly.
That's great. And your character's a sheriff. I was reading up on it. Is a sheriff who is retired, yet someone else was taken over. And then
he's Archie Bunker. He's Clint in Gran Torino. He's a guy who'd rather be sitting in his. He up until about a minute ago, he was a sheriff for 30 years, and he had a wife, and they're both gone and taken away. And now he just wants to sit in his lazy boy and drink 1,000 beers and watch the History Channel. But he can't even do that because there's 172 witches trying to kill him. And so he does what anybody would do. He gets a lead pipe and he starts to bash witches over their head.
That's great. That's awesome, for sure.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's because, again, with the popularity of some of these horror things now, and then add your genius, it's great. And witches. How did you come up with the idea for witches to kind of change the game a little bit?
Because we borrowed from the Salem witch trials, where 43 witches were burned at the stake. And in our fictitious town, this constable back in the day of witch burnings, he burns 172, and they're all falsely accused. So those souls come back as witches to hunt and kill every sheriff in the history of this town. But for some reason, they haven't been able to kill me during my 30-year tenure as sheriff. But now that I'm retired, it's open season on me. And we find out why they haven't been able to get me in the context of the show.
And fantastic. And that's great. And can people catch up? You said the season is the 23rd. Can people catch up with the earlier episodes to catch up to where the season?
Oh, God, yeah. You can binge the hell out of this thing. It's on every streaming service on the planet. And then the finale is Wednesday night. And the eighth and final episode we did, which is on Wednesday night on IFC, is one of the best half hours of television I've ever done, Scrubs included. It's just so ambitious and stunning.
Are you happy with your whole cast that together and everything in the show and all the other people that you're involved with in this show?
Yeah, it's a good question, because when you put together a small startup company, which is a production company, and you all, in this case, gather down in Georgia and Atlanta to shoot this thing, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if this one's a jackass or if this one's a butt buster. You don't know who's going to be busting your hump. And so you put together this group, the crew and the cast, and you roll the dice. And sometimes it's a disaster, and sometimes it comes out great. And this was largely fantastic. We borrowed liberally from the crew that was on hiatus from Walking Dead, which is shot down in Atlanta. And so all the effects people and, the witches are pretty much as good as it gets in 2016, because all the special effects people were, they were down. They were on their break. And so we hired them, and they were astonishing.
That's fantastic. I can't wait.
Again, the witches are rendered in a really scary way.
Yeah. And
because these people are great at their jobs.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, awesome. And so everything really worked out well. And any project, that you're really involved in, you just definitely want to see success. So where is the best place we can find information on you, John? Also, go ahead and find Stand Against Evil, especially tomorrow night, Wednesday night, to find the final episode and all that stuff. Where's the best place we can go?
Stan plays on IFC, and then it'll stream on every single streaming service on the planet as soon as the season wraps. And I can't recommend the show highly enough.
Fantastic. Are you on Twitter as well, John, that people can connect with you social media-wise?
Yeah, John C. McGinley at Twitter.
All right. Well, John, thanks for taking the time to come on the show.
And we live stream during the show, so people should get on. And it's Pound Stand Against Evil.
Yes.
And so we live tweet during it. It's really fun.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Well, John, thanks for calling, man. Take care. And best of luck and happy Thanksgiving.
All the best. I'll talk to you next time.
All right. Take care. Thanks, man. Okay. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor and Total Radio Net, and continue to have unbelievable guests, so I'm excited to welcome the program Sean Gunn of Gilmore Girls. Sean, thanks for calling.
Hello.
How are you? Sean, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Sean, and I wanted to talk about your experience before this Netflix special and how you reminisce about Gilmore Girls and your experiences so far in the show.
Well, it's this whole trip has been really crazy. It's wild to have done a show so many, that's been off the air for almost a decade,
right? Yeah,
and now have it come back and have everybody be talking about it. I think the show's more popular now than it ever was when it was actually on the air. So that's a very strange experience, but I love it.
So the ability to get back connecting with so many Gilmore Girl fans that you just never knew when you were doing the show, you're like, and now with this Netflix coming up, you're like, holy cow, everyone still remembers me and what I did. Is it interesting for you in a way, and social media wise, and how you can really stay connected?
Yeah, I kind of sort of can't process it. I went to this fan festival a few weeks ago in Connecticut, and the enthusiasm of the fans is really something like you generally only see in, you know, sci-fi fantasy shows. You know, it's like the Gilmore Girls fans remind me of Trekkers or you know, Doctor Who fans or something like that. You know, they've got
that's hilarious. Yeah,
culture that sprung up around the fans of the show. It's really crazy.
And then you're saying to yourself, well, I don't even remember some of these episodes, right? And they do.
Oh yeah, for sure. No, I remember a lot of them, but I definitely don't remember all of them. I mean, it's not uncommon for a fan to be like, I love it when you did this. And I'm like, yeah, no, I have no clue what you're talking about.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, Sean. I have not seen the Gilmore Girls ever. So you can take me back to that time. And what's the premise of the show?
It's just all right, for my demographic. It's all right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So tell me. I'm 43, but the 10 years ago, I was 33, so I was too busy. I don't know what I was doing at 33, but go ahead and...
You're older than me.
Yeah, yeah. Give me an update on, you know, specifically what the show was before, the premise of the show, and then we'll get right into the Netflix and what it is today.
The show Gilmore Girls is about Lorelai Gilmore, played by Lauren Graham. She and her daughter, Rory... when the show started in 2000, the mother is 32 and the daughter is 16. She had her at a very young age.
Okay.
And it's a story sort of about their relationship. The third Gilmore girl is Lorelai's mother, who she has sort of a contentious relationship with. And it really is just sort of about what it's like to raise a child as a single parent and raising them in a way that... where you are friends as well as, you know, a parent. And it's just kind of, it's not super, super plot heavy in terms of being like soap opera-y, you know? It's mostly about their lives and about the town that they live in. I think it's a cool take on a family show, I think.
Well, it definitely is, and it's the first one, Sean, that kind of spoke about these issues of a teenage girl with a child, and really brought it out, and that really changed a lot of the conversation about teenage pregnancy in certain ways, right?
I don't know. I mean, if that's a result of the show, I think why not? I think it's always good to have new. Fresh looks on television of what different types of families look like, you know, nowadays. But so the show picks up now. We're almost 10 years later, and we're just sort of revisiting these characters and seeing what they've been up to. It's been a strange ride.
It definitely has been a strange ride, and you remind me completely of the show, and I can't believe you're saying it's 10 years, because now I remember seeing the commercials of it, and I'm like, 10 years? Where did my 10 years go, Sean? I mean, I guess the older...
Totally. Yeah, 9 years since it's been off the air.
Yeah.
15 years since it... Or, yeah, 16 years since it premiered. It's really weird. And you know what, man? It's particularly weird for me, because... I started as just a, you know, I was just a co-star. I came on playing the DSL installer on the second episode, thinking I was just doing one episode and out. And they just kept asking me back for the first couple of seasons of the show. I just kept coming back to do little walk-on roles and eventually became part of the regular cast. And, you know, 100 plus episodes later, here I am.
Wow. And so that's a story for you and why you reminisce about the show as well, because you thought, I'm just doing a little short gig and I'm gone. There you go. I'll maybe come on once or twice. Maybe they'll see but you got written into the storyline and wow. And now
that's exactly right. I thought, you know, the first season that I did the show, every episode I did, I thought would be my last one.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy, man. All right, so 10 years later, so a lot of different storylines 10 years later. Wouldn't you agree? based on that. There's a lot of different storylines, meaning the people have changed in their ages and different thought process at this point in time. Yeah.
Yeah, the characters certainly change. Although, you know, my character Kirk is sort of he's sort of the village idiot, and he has not changed a great deal, unfortunately.
He has not. Okay.
He sort of has stayed the same.
He's not grown up enough, right? He's got another 10 years till it happens for sure, right?
Yeah, he's still living in his mom's basement. So, you know, make what you will out of that.
All right, so this is Gilmore Girls, A Year in the Life on Netflix, Friday, November 25th.
Premieres on Friday. It comes out at midnight on you know, Thursday and Friday.
So your hope is there'll be another movie made by Netflix, right? That's your hope, right? To continue this process.
I guess so. I don't know. The world doesn't get blown up by a meteor at the end of the show. So I don't. If the demand is there and the scheduling works out, I don't see why we, you know, who knows? Maybe we can make more. But let's see how these go first, I guess.
Right, exactly. But Netflix does a phenomenal job of bringing shows back that we miss. That's the great thing about Netflix, Sean. I mean, I just like, cool.
I know.
These people are coming back. Bring Pee-wee back. Bring you back.
It's a new world.
It is. It truly is. All right. Any other things you have going on you want to promote, Sean, and to find information on you?
Yes, I do. I actually have two movies coming out. I have this sort of intense psychological horror film called The Belko Experiment coming out on March 17th. Okay. And then the big one is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which comes out on May 5th. And I'm very, very excited about that. I think if you're a fan of the first movie, I think the second one is just as good, if not better. It's a lot of fun to make, that's for sure.
And, Sean, the best place we can connect with you on social media, where can we go?
You can find me at Sean Gunn on Twitter. Or at the Judge Gun on Instagram.
Okay, Sean. Thanks for calling, man. Best of luck, and thank you for educating me about Gilmore Girls. And I have a
teenage.
I had a teenage.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Take care, man. See ya. Okay. Bye bye.
Okay. See ya.
Oh, bye bye. Bye bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Fantastic. I'm excited to welcome to the program David Fry of the National Dog Show, presented by Purina. David, how are you?
I'm great. We've got a great weekend here, getting the dog show ready for everybody to see on Thanksgiving Day on NBC. So I can't have it any better than I do.
Absolutely. And David, I grew up watching the dog show when it was on USA Network, you know, with the amazing dogs and all these different things. You really were a childhood favorite of mine watching that show for sure.
That's great. I guess I've done it so long now that when I started out, people used to say, "Hey, David, we watch your show all the time. We love you." And now I'm getting, "Hey, David, we watch your show all the time. My mom loves you." So I guess I've been around a long time, but it's good for me, and I hope it's good for everybody else, too.
Absolutely. What is your favorite thing about the National Dog Show, covering it?
Well, first of all, how can you help but not have a great time when you're working with John O'Hurley? John's my partner and has been for 15 years. We're celebrating our crystal anniversary this year, we decided, although he's trying to get by with just giving me some papier-mâché thing. But that, of course, is fun. We have a good time bringing it to everybody. I love to see the show dogs of any breed, and we get a few new breeds each year, too, so that makes it fun.
It's just like saying one of your a child of yours. What's your favorite breed?
Well, you know, I'm supposed to be the dog guy, so I'm supposed to love them all, and I do. My own two breeds, I have a Brittany and a Cavalier at home, a great angel who will be watching, of course. I don't know if that counts towards our ratings, but we do have about 25 million viewers who see the show each year. So I think we can count them in there.
That was a great move by NBC to pick it up on Thanksgiving, because it's a perfect time for people to watch an event like this. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, it's a great family holiday. You know, you got your family gathered around, and what are they going to do when you're making the turkey? They've got some options on television, but if we're looking at three generations or so of family, or even four generations of family, we're talking about an age span from anything from 2 years old to 90. We think that's the perfect family sport for everybody to be watching, whether it's the competition or just the entertainment of seeing nearly 200 different breeds of dogs, or just to listen to John and me and our witty banter. So we're having a great time.
And I'm sure you get lots of people coming up to you saying, my favorite dog breed is this, and I had a favorite dog and they didn't win, or they won, and I'll never forget it, right?
That's it, exactly. I call it the alma mater factor, that if I'm sitting at home with my Brittany, we're going to watch for and root for the Brittany on TV. So we have a little bit of a vested interest. It's like me always watching and rooting for the Oregon Ducks.
Now, when we talk about, David, the whole process of judging the dogs, what goes all into it? Because I have you on the line so that people could have a preview of how to look at how a dog is judged.
Every breed has a written description of the ideal specimen of that breed. It usually relates form to function, whether it's how tall they should be, what kind of coat they should have, what their eyes should look like, and eye placement, and things like that. And it usually relates to whatever job we're asking them to do. That's called a standard. And each dog is supposed to be judged against that standard to see how close they come to fitting that ideal specimen of the breed. And then the judge will pick whichever one he or she thinks it comes closest to that perfection. And it's a give and take, because sometimes a dog with a great head might not move as well as a dog that doesn't have so great a head. So those are some things that go into the judging. At the breed level, which is the first level of competition, they're competing against the other dogs of the same breed. So maybe you can compare a little bit one to the other. But when they win, if the breed winner advances into its group. Now, let's say in the hound group, for example, one of seven groups. In the hound group, you've got the Irish Wolfhound, which is the tallest and biggest breed there is, competing against the Dachshund. Well, you can't compare a Wolfhound to a Dachshund. You have to compare a Wolfhound to the ideal Wolfhound, Dachshund to the ideal Dachshund, and whichever one that comes closest, that's the dog that's gonna prevail on that day. So now we've competed at the breed level, we competed at the group level, seven groups. Those seven group winners, sporting, hound, working, terrier, toy, non-sporting, and herding, those seven group winners advance in the end. It's like an advancing bracket in sports. Win the breed, win the group, you're in the finals. Seven dogs in the finals, the best show judge picks the one that they like the best.
I love your explanation. I didn't think of that in so many ways, and you look at these things. You guys explain it on television, but I remember when I was really young watching it, and it really makes you interested in wanting to pick the favorite dog to buy or go to a shelter to pick up when you see, if you luck out, when you see these beautiful animals and see how the breeds are. And it gets kids really interested in looking and comparing what their favorite breed is. Am I correct, David?
Well, absolutely. And we think of our dog show as a celebration of the dogs in our lives. They don't have to be purebred. They can be mixed breed. But all we're talking about is take good care of your dog, find the dog that fits your family, your lifestyle best, and that way we know that you'll take care of them and have that dog for the rest of its life. It could be as many 12, 15 years as a member of your family. And that's really what we're trying to inspire in everybody, because really the best in show dog is the one that's sitting next to you on the couch at home watching it. So hug your dogs is what we say.
Absolutely. And when you talk about your the person you host with, John, as you talked about O'Hurley, John is hilarious, isn't he? He's funny to work with, too. I like just his banter.
He's a lot of fun. I would tell him he's come to be personal friends through the 15 years with our families and all. But there'll be times where I'm sitting there and we're watching the dog show and he'll make some observation and say something. Wait a minute. That was Peterman. Where's Kramer? Where's George? Where's Elaine? Where's Seinfeld? Where are these guys? Because he really is a character. He's brilliant. He's talented. I'm fortunate to be working with him, except when I have to stand next to him on camera. The guy's 6'3", perfect hair, you know, one of America's most sexy men from People magazine a few years ago, winner of Dancing with the Stars. He's got a lot of things going for him, and he's taught me a lot about the business and been a lot of fun to be with all this time. And again, this week for the show.
And at times, did you have to educate him when you first started hosting with him about dogs, breeds, and all that stuff and spend time?
Yeah, a little bit, but I don't want him to be too technically educated because I want him to just be like the observer and somebody who's sitting and watching at home and sees something and wonders about it, might be asking the same question at home. I like it when he does that because it gives us a chance to explain things. Judging is really pretty subjective, and I can go to a dog show and watch a judge from outside the ring. And when the judge is done, I'll say, well, why didn't they pick this dog instead of that dog? And people can do that at home, too. Judge from outside the ring or judge from your couch and your living room and say, here's the dog I like and here's the dog I'm rooting for.
Absolutely. And I know one thing you're most proud of is your work with therapy dogs at the Ronald McDonald House. Can you explain, tell us about that for a second?
Well, our dogs are great at this because they're spontaneous, they're unconditional loving. They don't ask any questions about how you look or if you have money or how you dress. They're there in health. They come visit in healthcare facilities with their human partner and try to help people get through some tough times. You know, a dog, everybody who has a dog knows this, but when a dog walks into the room, the energy changes. People smile, they talk, they think about things other than their challenges. In a healthcare facility, perhaps, and it just makes everybody feel better, whether it's the patient or the staff that's working with them or their family. To work at the Ronald McDonald House in New York City for so many years, my two dogs, I can't tell you how many times a parent has said to me, geez, that's the first time she smiled all week. Just to be able to do that with your dog really makes it all worthwhile. And then our dogs work great tonight. My Brittany, we go to the VA hospital in New York City every Wednesday, and Grace does some work in PT and physical therapy where she's helping these veterans who may have a new prosthetic arm or something like that, helping them learn how to use their new prosthetic, or helping them just smile and get through the tough times. So I'm pretty proud of my dogs and happy to be the guy that gets them there.
Great job, David. Again, check you out Thursday on NBC Thanksgiving Day for the National Dog Show. Do you have information we can find info on you, David? Where can we go?
You can go to nationaldogshow.com, and it's the National Dog Show presented by Chewing at noon in all time zones. And come watch us for the 15th straight year. I think you'll be well entertained this year once again. And come along and have fun with us. Then have your turkey. Then watch football.
Well,
for the 2 hours from 12 to noon, or from noon to 2, hang in there with us.
All right, David. Thanks for calling, man. Take care, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thanks, Neil. All right, thanks, Neil. Good job.
All right, David. See you. Bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back. It's one, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor and Neil S. Haley Facebook, and also neilhaley.com. And very, very interesting story. I have on the line Nicholas Brooks, who is the son of Mel Brooks, and he has a film called Sam. Nicholas, thanks for calling. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much, Neil. It's great to be here, and thanks so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely, Nicholas. Let's jump right into all your life. Did you want to be involved in films and produce and write and direct and all that stuff? Was that something you always wanted to do?
Yes, Neil. I've wanted to be around film, but it wasn't until Sam that I really wanted to direct a film of my own. And I'm really, really grateful to have had the opportunity to, both to co-write and to direct and to produce this film.
Absolutely. And having your father involved in this, was that pretty interesting in the process as well when you brought this to his attention to be involved him in the film?
Yes. Yeah. My dad has been a mentor and a guide for a very, very long time. I worked with him as a story editor at Brooks Films for 25 years. And so he's taught me a tremendous amount about, the art and science and craft of filmmaking. I also just wanted to mention, Neil, that just a couple of quick names to mention to you. My co-screenwriter on Sam was John Gallagher, who has directed a number of films himself. He directed a film called The Deli with guys like Chris Noth and Ice-T, and he directed a wonderful film called Blue Moon with Rita Moreno and Ben Gazzara. And just wanted to mention a producer, Sybil Santiago, who was she's just such a wonderful human being and a great, great producer that I worked with on Sam.
Oh, absolutely. It's great to always, you know, tell who all was involved and part in this. So your father, in certain ways, this is the big, big production for you, but other experience. So you got a lot of experience just being around your father in certain ways in film.
Absolutely, Neil. I got to watch him direct parts of Spaceballs, and that was really a really cool experience. And I got to watch him edit parts of Blazing Saddles, and of course, he would show me the different drafts of the script, different scripts, you know, Young Frankenstein and everything. So it was really fun to see the evolution of these projects.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. Okay. So in that time period, Nicholas, were you involved in Hollywood all that time, or were you doing other things as well while you were around your father in those big films and stuff like that?
Well, you know, my dad, at a certain point, my dad moved to California. He moved to L.A., and I grew up in New York, so I wasn't living with him all the time, but there was a lot of back and forth and a lot of good communication, and he would share, you know, everything he was involved with, he would share with me. So I really got to learn, you know, by watching, and there was a lot of osmotic learning just by seeing him do his thing.
Yeah, and meaning your job, meaning you as a producer, writer, director, involved in film in specific ways, Nicholas, when you were in New York, were you doing that, or were you doing other things as well?
I was working with him as a story editor, even though, you know, I was in New York and he was in L.A., and I was writing. I was writing scripts of my own. So I would always get good feedback from him, you know, on whatever I was working on. So, you know, he's been a tremendous teacher, and he's just wonderfully supportive. He was so supportive of Sam, and really genuinely liked the project. I don't think it was like he was holding his nose but supporting his kid. I really think he genuinely likes this movie.
Fantastic. So what do you think in your career in writing and stuff, you've been writing for how many years, Nicholas?
I started writing, you know, when I got out of college, and I'm going to be 60 in December. So it's been just about 40 years, you know, 30, we'll call it 35, but maybe a few years longer than that.
Have you been writing books too as well? Nicholas?
Really interesting you mention that. I actually, with my co-writer Craig Knobbs, who was my UPM on Sam, just finished my first graphic novel. It's a really, really cool experience. I'm a huge fan of comics and graphic novels, and it was an amazing experience to write this thing and watch it come to life in pictures.
Interesting.
And
yeah.
You want to hear about it? Absolutely,
Nicholas. I'm happy to chat with you. You're such a great guy. I'm just trying to get your history. And that's what I love in these interviews, is telling a story so our listeners can understand, okay, Nicholas, you've been in the business for so many years.
Yeah.
Your father's so well known. But what were you doing in all this time working for your dad?
Well, can you hear me, Neil?
Yeah, I can hear you, Nicholas.
Okay. I was, as I say, I was working principally as a story editor. with my dad, and I would assist him in any way I can, including a lot of spiritual and, you know, kind of a cheerleading and spiritual assistance, I just wanted to mention the title of that graphic novel, if you don't mind.
I want to definitely get to that, Nicholas. Yeah.
Oh, sure,
Nicholas,
sure.
I wanted to tell you, I cover every year writers. That's why I brought that up, Nicholas. I cover the Miami Book Fair International every year, and I'll be covering it live this weekend. So I just wanted to – I'm not going to be there, but I'm going to be covering it. So I'm into graphic novels. That's why I just wanted to tell you that. Yeah, tell us the name of it.
Yeah, it's called Mercs, M-E-R-C-S, and it's not out yet. Well, we hope to get it out early in 2017, but it's about what are called either PMCs, private military contractors, but more typically known as Mercs or mercenaries. And, you know, we did a lot of good research on this, and we really had a lot of fun putting it together and writing it. So we're pretty excited about that. And,
right. And I'm excited, and you're welcome to come back on the show when the book comes out. So just definitely reach out to me. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So the question I'm asking is, throughout time as a writer, copy editor, all the different things for your father, other jobs did you have in New York? Yeah. I wanted to just know that, and then we'll get right into Sam.
Sure. I also worked on some film financing when I was in New York, trying to help other people get their films funded. And I also started a little company many years back to try to help people, get their scripts whipped into shape. It was a little script consulting company that I started. But, okay. You know, that came and went, but it also taught me a lot. And the other thing is I did get one of my scripts very early on. I got it optioned by a company called MCEG Entertainment that goes back to the 80s. And it was kind of a classic 80s comedy. And that was very, very instructive as well. I started a game company, a computer game. So I actually put out a little war game called Red Thunder back in the around the year 2000. So,
interesting. So you're definitely the jack. Yeah. Did you learn from your father to be this entrepreneur, trying different types of things?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My dad has written, produced, he's directed, he used to do advertising. He did the Big Banana commercials back in the 70s. And, in the Army, he was a combat engineer and a radio operator. So the guy has a lot of different talents. And, I learned to be flexible in that way from him.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, let's get to Sam now. I just looked at the cast. You have a very interesting cast as well in this, of some very well-known people. So this, you really jumped feet first into this project for sure, with your dad involved and all these amazing people. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, we have some great, great cast members, fantastic actors like James McCaffrey, who you might know from Rescue Me, and, he's a wonderful, wonderful actor, Stacey Keach, Morgan Fairchild, my leading lady, Natalie Knapp, is incredibly talented, and of course, we've got, people like Sean Clier, who's now on Odd Mom Out, Tom Pelfrey, who was on Banshee, and I'm really, really honored to have worked with such incredible, incredible people.
I wish I would have gotten the opportunity to cover this, because that is a who's who of talented people, and add your father to the mix. Wow!
Oh,
because you have it all together. And then, as you said before, your dad did not hold. nose to this project. It's a very interesting project. So tell us the storyline of Sam.
Well, Sam is a classic, in some ways, a classic gender switch comedy. A male chauvinist pig wakes up one morning as a woman and has to see how the other half lives. But it's got some unique twists to it. You know, I won't give away the ending, but the ending is definitely one of the unique twists. And I also think it tries hard to be sophisticated, a little bit edgy, and also harkens back to some wonderful classic movies from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and even some of the 80s comedies, like the stuff that Rob Reiner was doing in the 80s. Yeah. So, I tried to learn. I tried to, you know, draw from a lot of different threads and learn from a lot of different sources and then integrate that into Sam.
And that's cool. I mean, because, again, the storyline of a chauvinistic guy. So who tell us about the character. I know we don't want to get to the ending. People have to go and see it. But the chauvinist that has to do this. Now, does this remind you a bit in a twist of a 21st century Tootsie in a way, almost?
Well, a little bit. You know, Tootsie had its own twist, and I love that movie. I thought Dustin Hoffman did an amazing job. But it's a somewhat maybe a little more similar, Neil, to a movie like Blake Edwards' Switch. There was a wonderful movie back from 2006 called It's a Boy Girl Thing, executive produced by Eric Clapton with Kevin Zegers and Samir Armstrong, and you know two or three other movies like that. All of Me, I think. Remember that movie with Lily Tomlin and Steve Martin, and. You know, so it's got some interesting lineage, you know, when it comes from the sources that it draws from.
Definitely the sources, and then this conversation, right, of being a woman as a man, and how we've kind of really have built these conversations the last 5 years, and leading up to this in a way, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, absolutely, and you know, I'm happy to say that I think maybe going out on a limb here, Neil, but I think a lot of women like the movie because I really took the time to talk to women as I was writing it and really get their perspective on, you know, what their lives are like and what the challenges are, you know, that they face, even given the huge diversity, of course, among women. But I got some wonderful input as I was writing it.
Absolutely, and some definite wonderful input. So where can people find out more about the film and stuff? So you said, again, the premiere was a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yeah, the film is available now. People can go to Amazon, iTunes, Google Play, and, you know, a number of other places, you know, PlayStation. And so they can either order a DVD from Amazon or they can download it from all of these different sources. And we should be on Hulu sometime next month, I believe. I'll be able to forward you an exact date on that shortly. So
great.
Yeah, I urge one and all to go out and buy Sam and enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what would you say was the best thing of working with this great group of people and stuff? What would you kind of remember the most of the shoot and all the process of putting this together?
I have a quick general answer and a quick specific answer. The quick general answer is that every one of these people was my teacher, Neil. Everybody, you know, Morgan taught me, you know, a piece of the art and craft of filmmaking. Stacy Keach was a teacher. Jim McCaffrey, in his own way, was a teacher. You know, every cast member in their own way and every crew member was my teacher, you know, of course, along with my dad. And the specific memory that I'll share with you is watching Stacy Keach do his scene on the monitor and being so blown away that I wasn't directing the movie. I was just in it. I was just mesmerized by his performance, and I forgot to say cut. I was just staring, kind of dumbfounded at the brilliance, you know, of his work. And I had many such moments, you know, watching Natalie Knapp bring the character to life. I was just mesmerized at times.
Huh. Yeah. I hear you for sure, Nicholas. And what an experience.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? What's next? The book, as you talked about, next in January, I mean, in 2017, any other new projects coming up for you, Nicholas?
Yeah, it's stuff that's a little too germinal to talk about, but I will say that there's a comedy concept that I'm working on that could either be a web series or a TV series. It's just something that's making me chuckle. And I think the way the world is today, we need to be able to laugh. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to continue writing and to be able to laugh, you know, in the context of that.
Fantastic. Best place we can find information on you, Nicholas, and learn more about you. Do you have any social media?
Yeah, I think the best place, I'm on Facebook, but, you know, if you can go to the website, samthemovie.com, you know, there are bios of everybody, you know, including myself. And, you know, that's a good start right there. And then I'm on Twitter and Facebook as well. So I think that's pretty good right there. You know, and I hope to fill out that bio a little more heavily in the next, you know, 6 months, a year, as well. You know, and before you let me go, Neil, can I just thank you because you're a wonderful interviewer and this is a great show. And I just thank you so much for letting me share with you.
Oh, Nicholas, the stories of just how you've developed and where you're going. I'm rooting for you in these projects now, and I hope for more success for you. And I am such a huge fan of your dad, and I just, when I heard about this opportunity, and I know that your dad's not available for interviews, but ever if that happens, I'm happy to have both of you on anytime, anywhere, someday when we have that opportunity. So
Neil,
Call
my dad's
yeah.
office. I'll email you the number and you call his office and we'll set up an interview with you. So how does that sound?
Awesome. That sounds good.
Okay.
So I have your number, so I'll text you and then we'll see how it goes, okay? Well, I appreciate
Absolutely.
You coming on the show. Best of luck, Nicholas, and all the ventures. Thanks. You're always welcome on the show, man, all right?
Thank you so much. You have a great night, Neil.
You too, Nicholas.
Thank you.
Take care. Good night.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment.